6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation and police in New York are still searching for suspects and possible links between a bomb that exploded Saturday night in Manhattan and another found nearby. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo told reporters the blast was an act of terrorism.
At this time, there is no evidence of an international terrorism connection with this incident. It is very, very early in the investigation, and it's just starting.
The New York City blast came hours after a pipe bomb exploded in New Jersey, 135 kilometers away. No one hurt there, and de Blasio and Cuomo have said there's no evidence linking the two incidents. In the U.S. city of St. Cloud, Minnesota, a man stabbed 9 people at a shopping mall Saturday night. He's been identified as 22-year-old Somali-American Dahir Adnan. He was shot and killed by an off-duty policeman. Rick Thornton is with the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
We do not at this point in time know whether the subject was in contact with, had connections with, was inspired by a foreign terrorist organization. That's what the investigation is attempting to ascertain.
Islamic State claimed responsibility. None of the victims suffered high-threatening injuries. A senior Somali military official was killed in a car bomb explosion in Somalia's capital Mogadishu in a suicide attack claimed by the jihadist group Al-Shabaab, General Mohamed Roble Jamale, and at least 5 of his bodyguards died near the entrance of the Ministry of Defense in Mogadishu. General was leading officer in the fight against the Somali militant group. This is VOA News. In Syria, a fragile week-long ceasefire appears to be in jeopardy. Russia said it registered 50 violations of the agreement in just the past day. Moscow said an airstrike by the U.S.-led coalition on Saturday killed dozens of Syrian soldiers. U.S. said it was targeting Islamic State fighters in northeast Syria who were not covered by the truce. City of Aleppo also hit by airstrikes for the first time since the ceasefire went into effect at sundown last Monday. Clashes were also reported east of the capital, Damascus. French Foreign Minister Jean-Marc Ayrault accused the government of President Bashar al-Assad of undermining the ceasefire. Middle East Institute analyst Zubair Iqbal tells VOA the ceasefire was flawed from the beginning.
It's just a question of both sides trying to see where the weaknesses exist, because remember that ceasefire had no quote-unquote enforcement capability.
Iqbal referred to it as a pause in hostilities that appears to have come to an abrupt end. 9 days after North Korea's latest nuclear test, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry met with his Japanese and South Korean counterparts and called for tough new measures to further isolate Pyongyang. Test was North Korea's 5th and largest. Along with a series of ballistic missile tests, the North has been criticized for destabilizing regional security. Kerry expressed a continued willingness to try to revive dialogue with North Korea if it freezes its atomic weapons and ballistic missiles development program.
We have said many times that we are prepared to sit down with the DPRK to deal with the issues of non-aggression, of peace on the Korean Peninsula, of joining the international community, of attracting assistance and economic development, providing North Korea is prepared to talk with the rest of the world about responsible approaches to the question of nuclear weaponry and the nuclear program.
Three diplomats said they discussed ways to implement UN Security Council Resolution 2270, which imposed tighter sanctions on North Korea. Election results from Russia's ruling party has won Sunday's parliamentary election amid reports of election violations and a visible voter apathy in the country's two largest cities. And doctors attending former Israeli President and Prime Minister Shimon Peres say they plan to gradually reduce his sedation and respiratory support. 93-year-old, whose public career spans 7 decades, suffered a stroke last week. He remains in critical condition.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today's Monday, September 19th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. The main opposition coalition in the DRC holds a major rally today, Monday.
The purpose of the rally we are having on Monday is we will give to the Electoral Commission the notice for cancellation for Mr. Kabila to remove the power in 3 months.
Martin Fayulu is a member of the DRC opposition coalition known as the Rassemblement. Meanwhile, the DRC government says the ongoing political dialogue with other parties is proceeding successfully. The new president of the African Court on Human and People's Rights wants to end impunity on the continent. And 12 opposition parties in Liberia announced a collaboration to defeat the ruling Liberty Party in next year's election.
It is our hope and fervent prayer, believing in God, that this collaboration will not break down. We are not going to bow mouth to each other, and we will work together for the good of this country.
That's Senator Prince Johnson of the Opposition Movement for Democracy and Reconciliation of Liberia. A Somali man may be the perpetrator of the stabbing of 8 people at a shopping mall in Minnesota. And the UN General Assembly gets underway this week in New York. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, a coalition of leading opposition parties known as Rassemblement has called for a nationwide rally today, Monday, during which it says it plans to deliver ultimatums to the Electoral Commission and to President Joseph Kabila. Martin Fayulu, leader of the Commitment for Citizenship and Development Party and a member of the Rassemblement, says President Kabila will be given a 3-month notice beginning September 19 to step down in line with the Constitution. Fayulu also said the Electoral Commission will be told that beginning tomorrow, Tuesday, the Rassemblement will no longer respect the authority of the Commission because it has failed to respect the constitutional provision which calls for elections 90 days before President Kabila's term expires.
The purpose of the rally we are having on Monday is to tell the Electoral Commission that they should give us the decision that mentioned that they have called for the presidential election this year. Second, we will give to the Electoral Commission the notice for cancellation for Mr. Kabila to remove the power in 3 months. He has 3 months notice for cancellation, so he can leave the office on December the 19th. And this is in accordance to our constitution. The date of the election is already fixed by the constitution because there is a provision, what we call the provision 73 in our constitution, which says that the Electoral Commission should call for the presidential election 90 days before the end of the term of the current president.
Democratic Republic of Congo is a very big country. Where are you having your rally? Only in Kinshasa or all over the country?
All over the country where we have Electoral Commission office will demonstrate. All over the country and also outside the country where we have diplomatic representation. All Congolese will be out and entertaining Mr. Kabila. This is the beginning of the end. The 19th of September, he will give him a 3-month notice for cancellation, and that notice will end up on December 19th, remove or get out the seat. And also, starting from September 20th, it is a Tuesday, we will not recognize anymore the administration of the Electoral Commission because they have failed to fulfill their mission. They have to remove themselves and to resign and let the place empty.
Last week, there was some agreement between Mr. Vital Kamerhe and the government saying that they have reached some kind of agreement that could pave the way to elections next year. Do you want the elections next year or you want the elections this year?
That decision is among the Kabila side. This has nothing to do with the opposition.
What Mr. Kamere and Mr. Kabila agreed, they are in the same boat. We have to follow the constitution and also the UN Resolution 2277. That resolution is clear. The Congolese must follow their constitution. They must organize the election according to what the constitution says.
I did speak with the Information Minister Lambert Mende. He said that, he doesn't understand why you are demonstrating, because the dialogue is going on and soon the government and the opposition will soon agree on the timetable for election.
There is no dialogue there. There is a monologue. There is a group of people in the same boat, the same side. They are discussing their internal affairs. This is not the Congolese affair. The group should be a dialogue, should face two groups. Then what we are having.
Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition in the DRC, known as the Rassemblement. He was speaking with me from Kinshasa. The Democratic Republic of Congo's government says ongoing dialogue between it and some opposition parties is going well and could conclude this week. Information Minister Lambert Mende says the dialogue will announce Monday or Tuesday a timetable for elections. A coalition of leading opposition parties known as Rassemblement, led by veteran politician Etienne Tshisekedi, is not participating in the dialogue, saying it is in favor of President Kabila. But Mende says the dialogue is inclusive and every Congolese has the right to participate or not to. On Monday's planned opposition rally, Mende said everyone in the DRC has the right to protest.
They said they want to deliver a message to the Electoral Commission after a rally, so they make arrangement with the mayor city of Kinshasa. This is not the problem for the government. It is a problem, a local problem, with the Kinshasa mayor city. He accepted, so they will do so.
Of course, they want President Kabila to hold elections.
Let's stop joking. They are going to deliver a message about elections to those in charge of elections. That is the Electoral Commission. Not every time he's talking of President Kabila, Kabila, Kabila. Leave Kabila alone, please.
I guess I mentioned the president because in most countries, the government in power is in charge of the Electoral Commission.
No, he's not the owner of the country. The country is organized as USA, as France, as any other country. It's to the Electoral Commission to organize elections. It's not to the president to organize the election. That is why they are going to the Electoral Commission.
The group of opposition people supporting Mr. Tshisekedi, saying that the dialogue process is not a fair one, so they are not participating. Where are we in the dialogue?
That is their right to find that the dialogue is not a fair one, and it is the right for other opposition leaders to find that the dialogue is a fair one because they are participating. We didn't exclude anybody from the dialogue, so the dialogue is inclusive, but we can't force people to come to the dialogue. And the dialogue is doing well. We are ending it, I think, tomorrow or the following day. Tomorrow we shall talk about the timetable of the elections. Everything went very well. We had a very hard discussion with our brothers of opposition who wanted to come to the dialogue, and they are there. So everybody is free. The country does not belong to Tshisekedi or to Kabila or I don't know. We are talking of Congo.
You said that the dialogue is coming to an end soon and you will probably talk about the schedule for election. The second point has been, is there going to be presidential election before local elections?
That is the Electoral Commission. They are experts. They told us they will not be able to organize the election this year. So they asked the dialogue to give ideas how we come out of this problem of the commission not being able to organize the election this year. They went also to the Constitutional Court to ask what to do. So that is the way things are being held in a rule of state.
Lambert Mende is Information Minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Today's Monday, September 19th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. More than 12 opposition political parties in Liberia have agreed to collaborate under one umbrella for the purpose of defeating the ruling Liberty Party in the 2017 presidential election. President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf is barred by constitution to seek a third term, but her vice president Joseph Boakai is running. Some of the leading members of the coalition include Senator Prince Johnson of the Movement for Democracy and Reconciliation, Charles Bromskin of the Liberty Party, businessman Benoni Ure of the All Liberian Party, Senator George Weah of the Congress for Democratic Change, and Alexander Cummings of the Alternative National Congress. The announcement came Saturday at the end of a two-day so-called collaborative summit called by Senator Johnson in Niba County. Johnson tells me the purpose of the summit was to discuss the modalities how to ensure a violence-free 2017 elections.
We want to continue our peace that we celebrated some time ago. We did not want to see violence. So we all met to discuss the issue, how to collaborate and move our country forward. A technical team or committee was set up at a convention to draw all the modalities for the collaboration.
Senator Johnson, some time ago in 2011, you called yourself the kingmaker. Can we say you are trying to be another kingmaker for the 2017 election?
No, you see, it's about the 2011 election. Just before our election, there was a political Nobel Peace Prize given to Madame Sirleaf. That clearly showed to us in the opposition arena that the West actually wanted Madame Sirleaf. And so when I was there, please, I had no option but to decide in the interest of Madame Sirleaf without making the team. And the best thing I could do was to choose the lesser of the two evils. They come around, they know that there will be collaboration. Some will prefer merger, some will prefer alliances. Whatever the situation, they have come up with a team, a technical team, and will draw all the modalities.
As you know, Senator, the Vice President, Mr. Boakai, is running for also the presidency. According to what has happened in Niba County, you are on the opposite side of the Vice President. Could that be correct?
Definitely. Look, Mr. Boakai, all the wars in this country center around massive corruption. So for me, I was so happy when Madame Sirleaf took the reins of power and took oath on the Holy Bible, the divine word of God, and took corruption as the number one enemy to fight the corruption. Once she came to address the national legislature, joint section, to deliver the State of the Nation address, she now admitted openly to the whole world that the corruption in this government has metamorphosed into a vampire. And you know, corruption does not build a nation. It ruins a country. Corruption does not bring about economic growth and national prosperity. Corruption does not bring about stability. It causes a lot of problems. And so, since we put it out, we strongly believe that Ambassador Boakai is part and parcel of the regime that has the corruption that has been done as vampire. So when Madame Sirleaf is going, we have to go. If he remains, we will put him out.
Each time Liberians hear about the whole idea of opposition coalition, there's some skepticism because in the past, some people will want to come together, and then as the election comes closer, they will break apart. Can you assure the Liberian people that what happened in Niba is something that they can have trust in?
Well, it is our hope and fervent prayer, believing in God, that this collaboration will not break down. We are not going to bow mouth each other, and we'll work together for the good of this country. Prayer is the key that opens any door. So it is our prayer that God's divine blessing will be upon us so that we can think about the future of Liberia, how to build our country and bring economic prosperity.
That's Senator Prince White Johnson of Liberia and a member of the new political collaboration. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. The new president of the African Court on Human and People's Rights has called on African countries to ratify the protocol establishing the court. As Moses Javier Rimana reports from Arusha, Tanzania, only 30 of Africa's 54 countries have so far ratified the protocol.
The new president of the Arusha-based court, Sylvain Ore, has called on Africans that have not approved the court's protocol to do so and help end impunity on the continent.
The court has been set up to protect human rights in Africa. We have some cases, many cases, in the regional jurisdiction, African jurisdiction, where the journalists are oppressed, and there are some decisions. So it's not in the public knowledge. So based on that, I can say that there are some abuse of journalists.
Ora says the media have played a key role in exposing human rights violations in Africa and provided an avenue for the expression of different voices. However, he said the power of the media can also be misused to the extent that the very functioning of democracy is threatened or undermined.
Only as a judge of the court, we have been faced to some matters where some journalists has been condemned because they want to denounce some facts, they want to denounce some mistakes, and they have been put in jail. So for me, I think that it's an abuse of the media, because they, as I said, the media has to play the role fully for the good of the population.
The safety of African journalists has come to the fore, most recently in Kenya, where local journalist Dennis Otieno was shot dead by robbers for the photos he took. Lucas Baraza is editor of the Nairobi-based Nation Media Group. He said, until recently, Kenyan journalists have enjoyed freedom of the press, but now they said their security is threatened.
Kenyan journalists have enjoyed the freedom of the press for some years, but the situation has changed in the recent past. For the last 2 months, you have seen journalists being attacked, journalists being killed. In fact, on Thursday last week, we had demonstrations all over Kenya. Journalists were protesting.
Kenya is not the only country where journalists feel threatened. Since the beginning of the political crisis in Burundi last year, more than 50 journalists have fled the country for fear of their own security. Some of them, they say, have been tortured. It has been nearly 2 months now since locally based journalist Jean Bigirimana went missing a few kilometers away from the country's capital. Efforts to find his whereabouts have been yielded no positive results. Moses Havyarimana, VOA News, Arusha, Tanzania.
The man who stabbed 9 people at a mall in the northern U.S. state of Minnesota has been identified as a 22-year-old Somali-American. The leader of the Somali community in the state told VOA Somali Service that the suspect, who was shot and killed by police during the attack on Saturday, was Dahir Adan. Abdul Kolani said Adan was known to the community, was working as a part-time security officer, and was a smart and reliable person.
A gentleman from this community by the name Tahir Aden Ahmed was alleged perpetrator of a stabbing that cost injured 9 people at the cost of mall, one of the biggest mall in the area in central Minnesota. We have came out from the police press conference right now, and they haven't told us more information than we know. They told us there was 8 people identified as injured last night, but there is right now 9. 3 of them are admitted, and the rest were released because of a minor injury. Mr. Dahir was known in this community, and certainly a neighbor who lived in the same building. He was an honor student from Abola High School. He was a Poro Tech High School. Was extraordinary. Achiever of a junior ranking from St. Cloud State University. We've known him to be a reliable person. The family told us he was, in fact, a great leader and helpful member of that community.
How old was the suspect?
He was on his 20s, but we are not sure. We're not sure about him. He was on his 20s, but we don't know the exact birth date. We haven't asked the family.
When was the last time you saw the suspect?
Well, I might be the last person saw him. I was put into the parking lot. I don't remember, but between 6 and 6:30. And by then, when I put into the parking lot of my residence, he was actually at the next parking lot.
And what was he doing when you saw him the last time?
He wasn't doing anything. We don't know the full picture. We don't know the intention of why he did this. We don't know whether it was a fight between him and some other members. We don't know whether this was a coordinated effort. We don't know nothing about the intention of this person. The police actually shared with us they have seen a video when the life of that person was taken by the police.
Abdul Kolani is one of the leaders of the Somali community in the U.S. state of Minnesota. He was speaking with Haru Maruf of VOA Somali Service. World leaders are gathering in New York for their annual UN General Assembly meetings. VOA's Margaret Bashir reports that the war in Syria and the refugee crisis it has created are expected to dominate the agenda.
Leaders want to limit the spillover from the Syrian war, mainly the human exodus, to overwhelm neighboring countries and Europe. They will discuss the issue at two summits focusing on refugees. UN Chief Ban Ki-moon will host the first meeting on Monday.
More countries must resettle more people who have been forced from their homes. More countries must recognize the benefits of migration. And everyone, everywhere, must stand up against the animosity that so many refugees, migrants, and minority communities face.
President Barack Obama will host a second summit on Tuesday.
We expect that the summit will result in significant new sustained commitments to UN humanitarian appeals, expanded refugee resettlement programs or alternative legal pathways for admission.
But there is skepticism that either summit will do much to improve the situation of the nearly 5 million Syrians who have fled their homeland.
The only way you solve the Syrian crisis is through a political deal. I'm sure there will be some talk about that at the General Assembly, but Vladimir Putin is not coming to New York, and if Putin's not here, you can't have serious talks about Syria.
The United States and Russia agreed to a deal earlier this month for a ceasefire and on getting aid into Syria. The two countries also plan to cooperate on targeting terrorists, including the so-called Islamic State. Whether that deal is working or failing will likely shape discussions in New York. The UN Security Council will hold a high-level session Wednesday intended to put the spotlight on Syria, but expectations for results are low.
The reality is decisions about Syria are made in Washington and Moscow and in Iran, not in the Security Council chamber.
The rest of the week will be dominated by leaders' speeches in the General Assembly. Some big names like Vladimir Putin, Xi Jinping, and Angela Merkel will be absent. It will be President Obama's final time as U.S. president at the international gathering, and his speech will likely lay out his multilateralism legacy. It will also be Ban Ki-moon's final General Assembly as UN chief. His decade-long tenure ends on December 31st. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The man who stabbed 9 people at a mall in the northern U.S. state of Minnesota has been identified as a 22-year-old Somali American. The leader of the Somali community in the state told VOA Somali Service that the suspect, who was shot and killed by police during the attack on Saturday, was Dahir Adan. And that's it for this Monday, September 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very productive week.